everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with our friend Bob Dio. Bob on the other side of the glass today, giving Ray Allen a day off today, at least from the Buckmaster show. Bob is producing and engineering the show for us, and we welcome everybody to the Buckmaster Show midweek edition, September the 13th, 2017. As usual, we have a very, very full hour planned for you. We'll begin with Supervisor from District 5, Democrat Richard Elias. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about water with our Water Quarterly presented by the Central Arizona Project. And then we're going to continue on this fascinating journey about how the Willem de Kooning painting wound up in Silver City and now back at the University of Arizona Museum. The curator at UA Museum of Art joins us at 12:45. So very full agenda. Live line number 790-2040. Anytime that you would like to call in and give us your comment. Supervisor Elias always welcomes calls. It's not like he will turn down really anybody that calls as long as you are civil and make your point. Richard would be happy to hear from you. Richard, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bill, and it's always a pleasure to be here on your show. And I'm anxious to hear from the U of A curator. I've always been a big fan of de Kooning, and I remember when that painting was stolen.
Right.
And day what a loss it really was after, to the permanent collection.
Day after Thanksgiving in 1985, and, you know, winds up in Silver City, and the couple that had the piece deceased, so a relative was, like, doing an estate sale.
Wow.
And very fortunate for all of us, really, that this antiques dealer over in Silver City spotted the de Kooning and said, hey, something's not right here. So he started doing his own research, learned that there'd been a de Kooning stolen, and he caught a hold of the U of A. And I think, Richard, he gets the 2017 Good Samaritan Award.
Absolutely. He's a hero. Absolutely.
Yeah,
have it back.
It's just like, it's priceless. I mean, it's valued at $150 million, but it's gonna give the U of A Museum of Art some much-deserved visibility. So that's a very good thing. Property tax bills. I got mine yesterday and kind of nervously opened it. And within, I think, a couple of dollars, it is almost exactly where last year's was.
Well, you know, we reduced the primary rate and created a separate dedicated tax, property tax, for road repair and pavement restoration. And I think we're looking forward to seeing those changes. It's going to be something that we all need to do, and we're not getting assistance from the state like we used to or from the feds. So it's on us. But actually, Pima County is sharing these property tax dollars with all the jurisdictions within Pima County. So Oro Valley, Marana, South Tucson, City of Tucson, will all get their share. And I think it's really good and forward-thinking, and we look forward to making progress on improving our streets.
Priscilla Cornelio was with me yesterday on the show. It was her kind of exit interview because next Wednesday is her last day as the head of transportation at Pima County. She had a great career, and she's tried to make do in areas in some of those really lean years, Richard, after the market crashed and everything. And some people have blamed her for the poor conditions of the road. Hey, she was trying to put together what she could with no money, basically.
Right. I think Priscilla did a very good job as our transportation director. And I think the person who's replacing her, Ana Olivares, is going to do a great job as well. It's nice to see women in that role as directors at that level of the county, and to see them have a good career and a successful career is important. It's very difficult when the funding for the area that you're responsible for is slashed and battered and taken away, and Priscilla withstood all the criticism with a lot of dignity, and she should be very proud of herself and the work that she contributed to Pima County over the years.
790-2040, if you'd like to join in the conversation. I know a friend teaches at Pima, and he says his students, Richard Elias, are very, very concerned. They are dreamers, and they are worried that there are going to be roundups, that, and those roundups, immigration roundups, they believe are imminent. What are you concerned as well?
Well, I am very concerned. The underlying memos that have been exchanged in the administrative wing of our government in Washington have indicated that they're prepared to start doing roundups on people. And our youth and the Dreamers and the DACA kids, and I say our youth in general, because it's not just the DACA youth. It's all the kids that are in that age group. They understand. They get it. And I don't want to speak for Dreamers, but I have to tell you, at the events that I've been at with them, they're very angry about being betrayed because they gave personal information in trust to the government in trying to find a pathway to working and living and being here within the immigration laws that we have. And they feel betrayed because that they gave away information that now can be used against them. The other thing is they demand that their humanity be recognized and that they're not just economic numbers. They're not nameless workers who contribute to the economy. They are human beings with lives and loves and aspirations and dreams and beliefs. And they demand that that be respected. And I understand that. So I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned that the program get restored and that all those folks who applied for DACA are going to be respected and included in that resolution. But that remains to be seen.
You know, one thing that gets lost in the mix are the some of these kids, their parents came here actually legally on a visa. And the visas expired for whatever reason, and they stayed. And so it's not all Mexicans who broke the law coming into this country, Richard Elias.
No, not at all. Not at all. There's a lot of different reasons for our youth having that kind of status that they qualified for DACA. And that's part of the understanding, I think, that the Obama administration acted on. And it's a tragedy to see young people betrayed that way. And they're very, very hurt. They're very angry. And a lot of the students I know over at U of A that I've talked to, regardless of their ethnicity, feel that same betrayal and think that their fellow students are being treated very poorly.
And your own family, I mean, my gosh, or the Elias family, you trace your own family back to the Presidio days.
That's correct.
And this kind of stuff, how does that, from a personal point of view, you see all this kind of anti-Mexican stuff going on. How does that make you feel?
I think of my great-grandmother, who was a woman publisher of a Spanish language newspaper for 60 years. I think of my grandparents and my parents and how hard they worked and the things they gave to build community here because they believed in making a community that was strong. And it hurts me deep down to my soul to hear people saying these kind of things about folks that I believe really want to live here and be proud of their country and take care of their neighbors and take care of their neighbors' children and respect each other in really important kind of ways. So it stuns me and it hurts me. And I think of how hard those people I mentioned worked in their lives.
Let's see if we can work in Walter here before we take our first break on the Buckmaster Show. Walter, what's on your mind, sir?
Hi, gentlemen. I voted for Trump. He disappointed me with his take on DACA. I think there's another way. I wanted to ask your guest if he agrees with me. If we let them stay, we give them citizenship, but if they have a criminal conviction, they get deported.
Okay.
Well, I understand that, and I think it depends on what kind of criminal conviction. If it's a low-level misdemeanor, that's very different than somebody who's been convicted of a violent felony. So I understand that, and I agree with you on that. And I think that the students who qualified for DACA should not be just thrown under the bus and saying, let's start all over again, because they trusted and they gave the information that needed to be given to the authorities, and now it can be used against them. That's real tragedy.
12:15 on the Buckmaster Show. Supervisor Richard Elias with us in studio. If you would like to join in the conversation, 790-2040. Let's take our first break here on the midweek edition of Buckmaster, and we'll be back with Supervisor Elias right after these important messages. And they are important because the people who are supporting this program deserve your ear. Let's hear from them.
Since 1944, the Humane Society of Southern Arizona has helped over 1 million pets in Southern Arizona. I'm Richard Carmona, 17th Surgeon General of the United States and Distinguished Professor at the University of Arizona. Join me in supporting the Humane Society of Southern Arizona in their effort to build a new animal welfare center. Keeping the pets in our community safe and healthy helps ensure that our community as a whole is safe and healthy. Please donate now, because we are all in this together.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient, and improve mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org, and remember to always start with trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster, Thursday at noon, University of Arizona climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido, plus David Safir. Mr. Safir writes about education at TucsonWeekly.com. The name of the program, Buckmaster, and we air on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice. We've got our worldwide live streaming podcasts and the complete show archive on my website, which is BuckmasterShow.com. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by my favorite place for all things green. I'll probably be going by this weekend. Need some roses, need some geraniums. All the supplies, of course, that go with it, all the great potting soil. 3384 East River Road for Green Things by the Rito River Walk on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Just did a search over on their website. I do appreciate their very prominently linked to the Buckmaster Show right there on the Green Things website. And I also checked out their upcoming workshop, these free workshops. They've got one Sunday, and it's from 10 to noon, about using herbs and kind of doing your own kind of marinade for salads. Richard Elias, it kind of had my mouth watering.
Yeah, you know, that gets to
herbal
me.
Herbal tea, stuff like that. So, yeah.
I use herbs a lot when I barbecue.
You do?
As a smoking agent.
Sure,
You know, and it really makes your food taste great.
Anyway, greenthingsaz.com. They're just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and they're along, as I say, the Rito River Walk. And they're now, Richard, Jan, and Jack, the owners, took the original kind of 4 acres. You know that property over there very well.
Sure.
They took the property 4 acres, expanded it to 13, and it's just loaded with plants. They did a beautiful job. And it's a great location.
Great business.
Wow. Yeah, it is. All right, let's go back to the live line. Richard Elias is with us, Supervisor District 5. Ray would like to join in our conversation. Richard, Ray, go ahead. You're with Richard.
Yes, he was talking about the Dreamers, and basically he sounds pretty pessimistic about their future the way he's talking. And what would he propose as the best thing to do for the immediate and further future? In my mind, it's all been the fault of the Congress. Inaction in the Congress during the Bush, the Clinton, the Bush, the Obama, and now the Trump administration. That's the problem in my mind. And I don't feel that saying that the Dreamers were being misled by asking for information regarding all their information, personal information. If that should have all been resolved with a simple law or a set of laws from Congress.
All right, Richard Elias, what is your solution?
Well, I don't disagree with you, Ray. In fact, I agree with you. Quite honestly, those three administrations have all failed us in terms of getting legislation through Congress to support the Dreamers. But I think we could have kept DACA in place so that those students would still be in line, and give Congress and work forcibly with them to make sure that they pass a law that'll be something that'll be workable for these students into the future, instead of just throwing them aside and starting all over again.
Ray, go ahead. You had a follow-up?
Yeah, it's my understanding everything still is in place. You know, basically what Trump did is he kicked the can 6 months down the line to give it back to the people who should have responsibility, which is Congress.
Right, but if it doesn't get done in 6 months, it's over. And those applications die.
And then it's not going to be anybody's fault but our own. The DACA people should rise up and really, really, establish a campaign to get this thing done in Congress before those 6 months are over.
I agree, Ray. I agree with you completely. The only thing I'd say is that I don't care who's to blame. I think we should treat these students fairly. We should treat these young people fairly. And I don't think that they're being offered a fair shake at this particular juncture.
In what form are they not being offered a fair shake?
They applied for DACA fairly. They put their information in just like they were requested to. And now they're being told in 6 months their applications are going to be dead. I don't trust Congress to come up with a solution in 6 months. I'm sorry. I would like to be more positive about that. But given the inaction that we've seen over the last 16, 17 years on this issue from when the DREAM Act was first proposed, I'm sorry. I just don't think that's going to happen.
And you're also concerned that even during this 6-month period, you're concerned that there will be roundups.
Absolutely. That That is absolutely a possibility. If you look at the underlying memos that have come out of the Department of Justice, they allude to doing roundups starting as soon as next month. That's a frightening, horrible thing for these young people to face.
All right. On another subject, the Allie Miller comments, of course, your colleague, Supervisor Miller, Republican from District 1. Everyone has heard, I'm sure, about the controversy over that and her comments on Facebook. Richard, people weren't saying, let's take away her First Amendment rights, were they?
No. And I certainly never said that.
No.
I respect her First Amendment rights to say whatever she wants. And I think that's very important for an elected official to do. But it's quite another thing to be so tone deaf on a day when Americans were killed while neo-Nazis were rampaging through the streets of Charlottesville. That is not a day where we make callous and sensitive remarks. You have the right to say it, and I'll defend your right to say it. Because I'm not an idiot, but I also know that there's a point where good judgment takes over, and that's what we expect from our elected officials, and especially from our local officials who have direct contact with so many voters and so many people in our community.
So you were very disappointed. At least there was not some kind of acknowledgement that the timing was poor.
You know, my mama taught me to apologize when I was wrong, and I try very hard to do that, even in public. And so I think that that's the right thing to do, to be quite honest.
All right. Another item, that this exploding targets, what is that? That has now been passed, that Pima County exploding targets will not be allowed in this county.
Yeah, we passed an ordinance related to exploding targets. You know, it's not an attack on Second Amendment rights. It's not that at all. But given the area that we live in and the dry grasslands that we have where many recreational shooters go out and practice, using exploding targets is just wrong. And it was caused a fire that cost millions of dollars and damaged the ecological strength of the Sanyega Creek last year. You know, I think the final bill on that was like $9 million. That's crazy. We can use regular targets. We can still go out and shoot our guns if we want to, and that's all fine. But the county made sure that is no longer an option to people in order to try and protect this place from the fires that have rampaged so much of the West. People in Montana still just with real difficult situations with fires going on in giant grasslands. So absolutely a critical thing to do. I was proud of the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, it's been, what a summer, my goodness. 3 weeks weather-wise that probably none of us will ever forget with Hurricane Harvey and then Hurricane Irma. There was actually a third one that hit Mexico. So all
Jose,
at once. Yeah,
Tropical Storm Jose.
And then, as you bring up, rightly so, the situation in the West, and we're going to talk some more about this tomorrow with the University of Arizona climate scientist Zach Guido. These fires, many cases, some of the worst fires on recorded history in the Western United States, coming after one of the wettest winters with snowpack. And so people are all asking, well, how could that happen? And that, of course, we'll ask Zach Guido, and Zach's going to tell us that it could happen because we had also unprecedented heat and record-breaking temperatures and no rain for about 2 months.
Right. So it dries out the grasses that grow
very
in the
quickly,
early spring.
Very quickly.
And they become a tinderbox.
All right. So
very difficult. Very sad.
It's a very sad situation. Pima County Supervisors, you're going back to your regular schedule in September, right?
Looking forward to it, too.
So you've got kind of the twice a month meetings coming up. And still to come, one of the big issues that we'll be watching very carefully, of course, is Rosemont Mine. That issue is still out there.
Yeah, it's still out there, and it remains unclear how the Army Corps of Engineers is going to issue its opinion and then whatever the final rule is going to be. Don't know when that's going to be, but I think, Bill, you're absolutely right. We need to stay in tune with that and comment whenever there's an opportunity to, as public comment becomes open.
All right. Thank you very much, Richard Elias. We're going to talk more about Pima County on Friday. Our Friday focus interview will be with the Assistant Pima County Administrator. Jan Lesher will be coming on the program on Friday. It'll be good to see Jan again. Worked with her for many years back on my TV days at Channel 6. Jan and I raised a lot of money together for public broadcasting.
Yes,
when
she
we
did.
Did
She's still very dedicated
she
to it.
She is
too.
Very, very dedicated.
I wouldn't be the one to tell anybody, but I believe she had a birthday last week. You
did
might want
she?
To wish her a happy
I
birthday.
I will indeed. Thank you, Richard. All right, we'll take our break right here. Our Arizona Water Quarterly is coming up right after the break.
Since 1944, the Humane Society of Southern Arizona has helped over 1 million pets in Southern Arizona. I'm Richard Carmona, 17th Surgeon General of the United States and Distinguished Professor at the University of Arizona. Join me in supporting the Humane Society of Southern Arizona in their effort to build a new animal welfare center. Keeping the pets in our community safe and healthy helps ensure that our community as a whole is safe and healthy. Please donate now, because we are all in this together.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
What comes to mind when you envision the holidays? If it means surrounding yourself with family and friends as you welcome treasured traditions, just imagine if those moments were paired with sinking your toes in fine white sand and exploring quaint seaside towns. This winter, spend your holiday with a sense of adventure on a family reunion vacation. At Bon Voyage, we specialize in bringing generations together through travel. This is the perfect time to plan. Call Bon Voyage Travel at 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. It's time to focus on what I believe to be Arizona's most important resource, and that is water, because without the water, we're all in trouble. The Arizona Water Report is presented by the Central Arizona Project, Your Water, Your Future. Joining us now on the program, Karen Caesar. Karen is a member of the governing board of the Central Arizona Water Conservation District. Karen, good to see you.
Always good to see you and be here. Thank you.
I know the Bureau of Reclamation recently released the August 24th monthly study. Is there some good news in that report?
Well, there is. The Bureau's August 24-month study was excellent news. What it does is it looks ahead 24 months at what is going to be happening with Lakes Mead and Powell. And it showed that there is zero chance for a shortage on the Colorado River in 2018, next year, which means there will be no mandatory reductions in CAP's Colorado River water allocation. It also showed a reduced chance for shortage in 2019 and 2020. And this news is especially important for Tucson, where we would be nearly totally reliant on our groundwater if we didn't have the CAP's surface water supply.
Yeah, so that's a very important report. It is not a monthly study, as I kind of indicated. This is a 24-month, a two-year study looking forward. And we've been talking in our quarterly reports, Karen, so much about the possibility of shortage. What happened to kind of turn things around?
Well, you know, and we have been talking about this for the last couple of years, and there are two primary factors that have really turned this around. One is improved hydrology, and I heard you just mention the snowpack and the very wet winter that we had. And the other is a continuation of the contributions to at Lake Mead, the water contributions, by all of the lower basin states, and that includes California, Nevada, and Arizona. First, let's talk about the improved hydrology. As you said, the snowpack last year was above average, and that resulted in increased runoff, which bumped up the elevation in Lake Powell by about 20 feet. Again, remind everybody, Lake Powell is upstream of Lake Mead. So due to the operating rules in the 2007 guidelines that govern how both lakes are managed, the increase in Lake Powell's elevation allows for a 9 million acre-feet release to Lake Mead, which is about 770,000 acre-feet above the normal release.
You also mentioned that contributions by the lower basin states help protect Lake Mead's level. What role has Arizona and the CAP played in that?
Well, for several years, CAP has been working with the federal government, our partner states in the Colorado River Basin, and Mexico to address the declining level of Lake Mead. And this decline is not just because of the extended drought, but also the structural deficit that your listeners will remember we've talked about before, which is the imbalance in the between the supply and demand on the Colorado River.
And you also mentioned in our previous discussions a couple of programs that CAP has been involved in that I guess have really in the long run here made a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to, you know, we're appreciative of the help we've gotten from Mother Nature, but we weren't relying on that. And to that end, CAP has participated in two programs that have made a huge difference. One is the what we call the Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU for short. And the second one is the Pilot System Conservation Program. So to start with the MOU, in late 2014, the Arizona Department of Water Resources executed an MOU with the Bureau of Reclamation and municipal water agencies in California, Nevada, identifying the need to keep water in Lake Mead. CAP helped with that by storing nearly 350,000 acre-feet in Lake Mead, and that water came from agreements with our municipalities and irrigation districts.
So how much water is then left at Lake Mead?
Well, the past 3 years, CAP and its partners, which have included the Tohono O'odham Nation, our CAP water users, Bureau of Reclamation, and ADWR, have voluntarily left more than 640,000 acre-feet of the Colorado River water in Lake Mead. And it's really due to these combined efforts to leave the water in Lake Mead that we can now say the lake is approximately 15 feet higher than it otherwise would be right now.
Well, collaboration is so important, and it seems to be very important part of the success of the water in Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a big, complicated issue that requires a lot of people working on it, and CAP is very proud of our collaborative efforts toward this. In fact, I get a chance to recognize one of our staff members. His name is Chuck Collum. He's our Colorado River Operations Manager. Was recently recognized by the Bureau of Reclamation along with his peers. This is the collaborative part. Chuck and his peers at Metropolitan Water District of Southern California and Southern Nevada Water Authority for their efforts in collaboration with the U.S. and others for the successful pilot system conservation program and the memorandum of understanding that we just talked about.
And Tucson Water has been playing a role too, haven't
they? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, with ADWR in the lead, we have been a collaborative partner on Colorado River issues, including Tucson Water, as well as our other CAP customers here in Southern Arizona, Metropolitan Water District, Oro Valley, and Marana. So we've been working all together to increase the flexibility and certainty in their CAP water supplies.
What's this, on another subject, I've heard about this excess water task force. What's that about?
Well,
it's sort of a contradiction, right? I mean, we've just been talking about we're really welcoming getting water to the level it should be, but not really. We haven't been talking much about excess water.
Right. It doesn't seem like there's any excess water to go around with everything we've been talking about. But what that refers to is the amount of CAP water that's available to deliver after we've satisfied all the long-term contract orders by cities and tribes. The reason there's additional excess water, because you think everybody tries to use, if you have a CAP allocation, our customers try to use as much of that as possible, obviously. But under our contract with the federal government, CAP has the right to divert all of Arizona's Colorado River allocation that isn't being used for equal or higher priority users, including along the main stem of the Colorado. So those are people that don't get their water from the canal, but farms and cities and tribes that take their water directly off the river. It amounts to about 500,000 acre feet of year, and that amount of water is termed excess CAP water.
That's a lot of water. Who's been using that, Karen Caesar?
Well, our biggest user of the excess water has been agriculture, but it's also been the primary supply for the Arizona Water Banking Authorities. And in the past, cities and industrial users have used it as well.
So how is the excess water different from the supply available to, say, Tucson Water?
Well, that's a really good question, because CAP has different priority water users. And Tucson and our other local water providers have a much higher priority right to CAP water. In fact, excess water, the term excess water, is the lowest priority water we have. It's the very first supply that would get cut in a shortage, and it's only available on a year-to-year basis, and we never know exactly how much.
Why the special task force, though?
Well, so CAP, in order to really, use a water term, take a deep dive into excess water. Oh, that was
there you
that
go.
Was that
I,
was good
I love it.
Or
yeah.
bad. We know that our water supplies have tightened, and there's a renewed interest and attention on what is the best use of this excess water. Our board's responsible for setting the policy for the distribution of this water, and so establishing a task force lets us really look closely at current issues and perspectives on what should be done with that water. The task force then would develop policy recommendations that would go to the board consideration for policy changes.
So is there a connection between excess water and recent efforts to leave water in Lake Mead?
Well, yes, there is. And in fact, most of the water that has been intentionally left in Lake Mead through the MOU, through the Pilot System Conservation Program and other programs would have otherwise been available to deliver as excess water for agriculture or water banking. We strongly support the efforts, obviously, to protect Lake Mead and the water levels by working with our customers. And we've helped avoid the shortages on the Colorado River, which is positive, but there's always trade-offs. In this case, when we don't deliver water and we leave it in Lake Mead, the trade-off is that we may have increasing costs to our CAP customers and other users. So we have to carefully consider the impacts on the operational rules that govern how Lake Mead and Lake Powell are conjunctively managed, as well as the impact on our customers when we decide what to do with that excess water.
The good news is, though, Lake Mead and Lake Powell are looking better as far as the levels.
They are. In fact, I checked it at the end of August. Mm-hmm. Lake Mead was at elevation 1081, uh-huh. which is only 6 feet above the shortage of 1075. If you figure that we've helped leave 15 feet in that lake, all the policies and efforts that everybody has done so far has really kept us out of shortage.
Well, water can be a very complex issue, and how can listeners find out more about what's going on?
Well, there's a link to the Excess Water Task Force on the CAP homepage, which is cap-az.com. That leads to a lot of background material. Our task force meetings, as well as all of our board meetings, are live streamed and also archived for later watching. The next task force meeting is October 18th, but I also want to let everybody here in Tucson know that our October board meeting will be held here in Pima County. Once a year, we hold a meeting in Pima County, and so that's October 5th at the Omni Tucson National Resort. Public is welcome to come and attend and watch the board in action. And as always, you can live stream our meetings and see what's going on there. So
and as far
lots
as the,
of ways.
The composition of the board, you have how many members of the CAP board?
There are 15 members on our board, four from Pima County. So I am one of four of the representatives from Pima County.
Karen Caesar, thank you very much. Good information, bringing us up to date. And I think generally the water picture looks a lot more encouraging than it did during your past visit with us. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you so
much,
Bill.
Thanks a lot. All right. We'll be right back on The Buckmaster Show. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Phillips Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Phillips Plaza. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. The Twisted Tandoor, the legendary Indian food truck, now has a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu expands on the popular Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, it's at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive and on the web at thetwistedtandoor.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. This portion presented by our good friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive east of Tucson to historic Silver City, known for its vibrant arts community. Downtown Silver City hosts a variety of galleries, gift shops, historic buildings, some great places to eat, and very interesting architecture. There's a great listing of the places to stay and the many things to do on their fine website, which is southwestnewmexico.org. The 1950s painting titled A Woman Ochre by the modernist master Willem de Kooning was stolen from the University of Arizona Museum of Art the day after Thanksgiving in 1985. The masterpiece, valued at approximately $150 million, was discovered earlier this year by a Silver City antiques dealer looking through a home at an estate sale. The couple who had the painting in their bedroom are now deceased, and a relative was selling off their things. The antiques dealer contacted the University of Arizona, and the rest is history, as the painting is now back where it belongs at the University of Arizona Museum of Art. And the UAMA curator Olivia Miller joins us now in studio. Olivia, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
You think about what this has done to the visibility of the University of Arizona Museum of Art, and it really is astounding, isn't it?
It really is. We can't believe it.
I mean, the publicity all over the world about this. We were talking with Margaret Regan, the longtime Tucson Weekly Arts writer, yesterday on the program. We're talking about her cover story about the de Kooning, and one area that we didn't really have time to get into is how the de Kooning even originally wound up at the University of Arizona. What was that story?
That story is also a pretty special part of its history. The painting was first exhibited at the Martha Jackson Gallery in 1955. And in December of 1957, one of our most prominent donors, Edward Gallagher Jr., purchased it directly from Martha Jackson. It was actually part of her personal collection. And he urged her to sell it because he specifically wanted to buy it for the University of Arizona. Hmm. And that's how he was with most of his donations. He hand-selected artwork that he wanted for the people of Arizona. And so he urged her to donate it not only for the people of Southwest, but also as part of this memorial collection that he established for his son. So after he bought it in December, he donated it to us in January of 1958.
He kind of was, his donations have really formed kind of a foundation for you, haven't they?
Absolutely.
Prominent pieces, the Spanish, is that from the Gallagher as well?
That's from the Crest Collection.
From the Crest Collection, which is another huge donor to the University of Arizona Museum of Art. So what is the situation now with this painting, with the de Kooning?
Sure. The situation now is we're all still in shock. So that's kind of, you know, right. the feeling at the museum. But we're also really we're getting moving on trying to move things forward as best as we can. First and foremost is our concern over the condition of the painting. So we are in contact with the de Kooning Foundation, and they've been tremendously helpful in providing recommendations. We're likely going to convene a group of scholars together to help us with some of the major conservation decisions that are going to have to be made in regards to the painting. And so that's where we are. With that said, we're also thinking about, you know, what is this going to look like when it goes back on display? What type of exhibition will we have? We certainly want to celebrate it. And what will that look like? So we're kind of looking at, you know, many different things. It's part of a much larger picture.
Like this obviously would be a centerpiece for an exhibition. It would make sense to kind of show off also some of your, because this is not the only modernist piece you have in your collection, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, this, you know, the Gallagher gift has a lot of highlights of modern art, including Jackson Pollock and Mark Rothko, Hans Hoffman, Carl Appel, Marcel Gorky. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And, you know, and that's one of the things that we're really trying to sort of navigate as a museum, is that we know the theft is an extremely interesting part of the history, and that's certainly what the public has latched onto, and that's understandable. But at the same time, we don't want that to be its only story. You know, we want it back in its context to being, you know, among the other modern masters that we have in our collection.
And you have a fabulous collection. And for people who don't know, the University of Arizona Museum of Art, some people perhaps overlook it. Maybe they go to the Center for Creative Photography, or they go to the Tucson Museum of Art, but they somehow, your museum is under the radar screen.
Correct.
And one of the wonderful things about the rediscovery on bringing the de Kooning home is that people now are realizing we have it one of the finest university museums of art in the country, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with our location.
Yes.
That makes
it's been
it,
a problem.
It's been a problem. You know, and it wasn't always a problem. At the time when the de Kooning painting was stolen, you know, our parking lot was out front.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the university has really grown, as it should. But at the same time, you know, it's brought our visibility down just by our location.
And for folks who don't know and have not been to the museum, how would you describe the best way to come visit you?
Yes. Yeah. And that's a great question. Yeah. The best way to visit us is, first, I recommend parking at the parking garage on the northeast corner of Park and Speedway.
Okay.
And from there, you can walk under the underpass. And immediately on the right-hand side, once you come through that underpass, you'll see a staircase. And if you walk up those stairs, that will take you right to the museum. If you prefer ramp access, you can just keep walking past the stairs and you can circle back around.
So what do you have planned, some of the highlights for your season? Because certainly we're into the art season now.
Absolutely. We do have a lot of our permanent collection on display right now. The Crest collection is always on view. We mm-hmm. have a lot of our modern highlights. We have a wonderful sculpture show. Much of that is from the Gallagher gift. But we also have some temporary exhibitions that are happening. And New Mexican artist Erin Currier will have an exhibition called La Frontera. And that will be happening. She is a collage artist, so they're collage and acrylic works of art. The School of Art faculty exhibition will be happening in the main gallery, and that's always really exciting to see what the faculty have been up to and see a lot of their recent work. We also have our community exhibition, Mapping Q. This, I think, is the fifth exhibition that we've had, and that has gotten national recognition as one of our major community programs at the museum. And lastly, we have another exhibition called In Transit, and that concerns a lot of border and migration issues, and that is guest curated by two professors from the Department of Spanish and Portuguese.
All right, Olivia Miller, some exciting things going on, and I'm sure as you try to plot forward where the de Kooning or when the de Kooning will be coming up, we'll be hearing a lot about that. But certainly, I think people are hoping within a year. I've heard that kind of kicked around.
That's what I hope, but we are at the mercy of the conservator.
You are, of course. Generally, the condition, though, was pretty good, would you say?
I mean, you know, yes and no. Considering what it's been through, yeah. I'm so grateful it wasn't destroyed.
Right.
But it was cut from its frame. It was mm-hmm. framed, you know, restretched and framed by a non-expert framer.
So yeah, there are issues.
Yeah, there are some issues. There's some cracking.
All right. Olivia Miller, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up this afternoon, we've got Mike Check with Mike Shaw from 4 to 5. Wake Up Tucson tomorrow, 6 to 9. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with the Buckmaster Show for our Thursday edition. And we're going to talk about this very weird August and September that we've had with the hurricanes by talking with UA climate scientist Zach Guido. That'll be tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. Until then, on behalf of my fine producer, engineer Bob, thank you very much, Bob. Always a pleasure. Have a great afternoon.